Hello, can anyone hear us?
Telling people that they could, we need to ship, we just be empty. We just find you doing it. The most thing is, the April CIA will not have a full transfer trip, not just local trips, we need to have regional trips. All the way from the Bay Area here, there's no one studying. We're looking at the smaller projects, not the comprehensive plan. Caltrans' comprehensive plan said they said transit is going to be 3 times more cost there. This one is not discussed then. I'm concerned that we really haven't looked at a competition, and we haven't really looked at the solution here. We're just going to get a mole flying. We're fixing one group of ours and not looking at comprehensive. We think global, we think about climate change, we're not doing that. And we know that this demand is science. We can't deny that. We need to address it, but I haven't seen this board really struggle with that really difficult concept. So I'm urging you, please, I tell you, I'm going to be talking about this with lots of people in Davis, lots of commissioners. I'm going to be putting articles in the paper. I'm going to talk to you about UC Davis.
Time.
This is my dream. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. Anybody else here in person would like to make a comment? Come on
up. I feel like the city for the facilities, so I was aware that the UC Davis representative were able here, but I'm also from UC Davis. I work in the Engineering Professional Education Department in the International Program, and I'm here for myself because I'm a commuter and for part of my work because I have so many students who are placed in Woodland as residents, and when they live here in Woodland, they also can take 42B in the morning and 42A in the evening. So there are two things I'm actually looking, hoping to explain to you that would be really helpful to all of us, including my personal. There's an additional stuff added to 42A, so of course we all know that that pushed 42A to arrive at the Lutheran County Fair Mall about 5 minutes, well, 15 to 20 minutes later than it used to. But it lands in here at 5 minutes after the hour at the scheduled time for the 42A to arrive at the mall. The local buses, 211 and 212, have not changed, and they continue to leave the mall on the hour, forcing commuters like me, including my students, including many of you come here, to have to wait a full hour for the next local bus to come to bring us home. So during the colder months, this has caused them to be standing there at the bus terminal, literally, in the dark, because we all know we've been near the mall lately, the lights are constantly broken over in the parking area. And it makes them stand there in the cold, uncovered for a full hour, which extends their commute time, which is unreasonable, in my opinion, because I've done it, which is proof. Some of these students, though, during the year, we have youth students who are doing this, as well as adult students. All our international short-term program students, so we're looking at residents who are here long enough to participate in the campus program, but their English level is very low. Anywhere from we have 100 to 800 scores, 100 level is not uncommon, 300 is most common, which is very difficult for them to do to deal with taking so much. The second thing I'm asking about is in the afternoon, like in the morning, 42A and 42B, you can get an extra stop through that same commute route in Woodland. One of, in the 42A, it's a half-hour pickup, start at 5:43. There's a 4:50 bus before that. The 5:43 is often packed as sardines by the time our students get on the bus because they come from Sacramento in that 5 o'clock. So if we could get another pickup between 4:50 and 5:43, that would relieve the pressure on 5:43 being overpacked four times a year on multiple consecutive nights. And it goes to two things I'm looking for. To end, thank you for having us provide transit service that is faster, more reliable, and convenient. I think I touched on it.
Thank you for your comment. Anybody else here in Rhode Island to make a public comment? I am not on the agenda.
Sure.
Come on.
Yeah. On the words of Mike Lennon, senior citizen, Alex Chevrolet. 8:70 p.m. I'm a senior citizen, believe it or not. But anyway, my condition is never get. Last week, last month, we had the hearing about my wallet was missing from the bus. They have the cameras there. They wouldn't turn them over. I don't know why. Still, it happened at the 7:16. What? How many months did that go? He didn't know nothing about it. I was with this department at this report 2 or 3 times. We're in the report. Still waiting for it. So last week I went to Pasco, got parts of my wallet over there. Okay, I'm going to go. Nice Randy and Winter and Davis. Senior citizens, my girl. What I'm trying to say is, why are they different? Why do they charge them for the $100? They only charge $2 for a dollar. Okay, I don't know. But it says, they got these viruses on a bike for a dollar. Okay, fine. But it just, it says here, they book 9 minutes for Sundays. All day. It does. It says here all day, but it doesn't only half day. They're lying here, okay? And then, last meeting we had, Ms. Jesse said that they don't serve Winters, Davis, and Michaelville, etc. We already spoke to three drivers. Yes, we do. So somebody's lying here, okay? So, the next issue. Okay, this is the first one. When I got picked this afternoon, when I got picked up at night, I paid my $4 fee fare with them. They took me to the gym. I got off there. I got back in there. Another $4 to the red box at Lester. And then I told the bus driver, I told him to lunch. So it's only $2. Nobody in there for $2. We've all been paying $4 for one stop to the stop. How can they deal with that? I never told them. Okay.
Time.
Thank you for the public commenter.
Am I done?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, your time's up. I do believe we do have items regarding fares and those on the screen back in April. Is that correct? That's on that basis one?
Yeah, Mr. Baker, thank you. Yes, the microtransit fares, as you talked about last meeting, the microtransit, we are bringing back a plan for microtransit fare changes as well as service changes for the city of Woodland.
One more call for any more public comments for folks here in attendance. All right. So seeing none, we'll close public comments and move on to our consent calendar. Any consensus might call us to pull anything from our consensus? No? All right. If you can, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar. All right. Moved by Trustee Fair, Trustee Fine Moore. Any other questions or comments? All right. We'll go to a vote. Trustee Fair? Just do one, yeah, and we'll do that. That sounds good to me. I'm used to the Zoom format. You have to call everyone out. Yeah, we'll just do a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Same. All right. Motion carries. Thank you. All righty. Moving on to agenda item number 4, administrative report. I'll turn that over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. First, I'm going to actually board member forward to any of the terms of the board of directors.
Anything for my colleagues?
And then the next up is trans all
reports. Okay. Michael here. Good evening. Michael Klein. Well, for the whole economy, we're here last time, but for 162 for active operators, we succeeded with the current service with standby ships in there as well. We have 6 in training right now. We'll be starting the class on April 3rd. We have 3 for that class. We're going to be doing a job fair a week before that, hoping to get more in at that time. That's it. Any questions?
Any questions? Okay. Nice to meet you. Thank you.
All right, and the next up is my final report, and the written report did go out on Friday, as it usually does. So I don't have a lot of other things to say. I did want to, as we've all been getting back in person and knowing each other, I just wanted to introduce the person, the 11th, that our interim CFO this year. Just wanted to introduce them. I don't think any of you have met him in person before. This is his first in person we're meeting, so glad to have him here. And then another thing I did want to note, as some of you are aware, we have an event coming up this Friday where we'll be doing a tour of the transportation project before Caltrans, the California Transportation Commission, leadership, and so and working in partnership with many of the staff of local jurisdictions will be touring the Nevada Transit project here. So if that is not an event that is open to the public, it's a private tour, but I just want to be available to answer any questions you may have, and I can follow up with you afterwards on that. We're very much looking forward to that. So that's fine. That will conclude my oral comments, and happy to answer any questions on anything else that's here in the report.
All right. Any questions, just need clarification on the report? Oh. All right. We're moving right along here.
Let's pull up the long-range calendar. So just very briefly on the long-range calendar, we have, as of next month, we're calling it our Woodland Service Plan, but this is like our Woodland Microtransit as well as 6 drop service changes, and that includes the kind of comprehensive look at our microtransit policies, today in our fare policies. So this has been a lot of comments. I also want to note in your packet tonight, we did receive a lot of more written comments about Knight's Landing. So you'll see that those are in there. So we'll be bringing that back for preliminary discussion in April, but then final approval in May. And in between, we'll be taking that service plan to the Woodland City Council as well for their feedback on the Woodland pieces of that. Also next month, we're going to have a progress for our annual goals. The board did adopt our goals for the year in October, so we are at the 6-month mark. So I want to talk about how we're doing there, and that's also a good lead in into the annual budget season. And so you'll see that we have the preliminary budget in May and then approval in June. So that progress report helps us to kind of talk about where we are with our annual goals and how this is updated as we go into the next fiscal year. And then lastly, an update on that bill of being managed claims. And there is a written update in your report. We're looking forward to having some board discussion at that meeting. And then you're going to hear a little bit from Courtney tonight about our Zero Emission Bus rollout plan. She'll be talking about that tonight, and then we'll be bringing that to back to the board today as well. So that's a look at our long-range calendar.
Okay, perfect.
I'm wondering who the April item service plan would that be? Can you touch on the tools on the conversation tonight? Or is that going to be the
Well, we'll actually be talking about the 42 tonight.
Okay.
Less so about the 211 and 212 and the kind of the issue that was raised around the kind of coordination of the perspective on that. But we'll be talking about that tonight.
Thank you for your question. Any other questions for Autumn on this agenda item before we go to public comment? All right, seeing none, we will move to public comment. Do we have anyone on Zoom that would like to make a public comment?
Not this time.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to public comment for people who are here in attendance. Welcome to first public comment.
My name is Al Hirsch. I've urged you to put on your agenda a review from Caltrans of a comprehensive multimodal corridor plan. This is the big picture plan from freeway improvements from Cortina's Bridge all the way to Rye Avenue in Sacramento. This puts our project in context. It shows the widening. We'll basically keep this climate. I think we need to have the Caltrans, which released the draft of this plan in January, 14 months ago, still has not put it on the loan website. I found it on the FTA website. It's not really acceptable. I'm going to make an issue in public of the lack of disclosure of this plan, the lack of engagement, and the statement that tells you to be that it involved in agency. I did a public records request to the agency and not been involved with the plan. Caltrans surmised in this draft plan that you were involved. I urge you to get a draft plan so you see this widening of IA in cost. Please put it on the long range scale. It's very important.
Thank you. Any other public comment for anyone here in attendance? All right. Seeing none, we'll move along. I'm going to move on to agenda number 5. Status report on Route 42 service changes and impacts to Southfield. Over here. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair, board members. My name is Eric Wright. I'm here to discuss service changes that have happened on Route 42 and give you kind of a status update of what we've heard and seen since we implemented those changes. So on September 19th of 2022, the district implemented changes to the Route 42. This included streamlining the route through data, having service on 5th Street. It also included doing 30-minute service during the peak morning period, and then 45-minute service all day long. In the report, you'll notice that ridership for 5 months up till now is up roughly 13.9%, which is about 26.3%, and by February it was 13.9, but it had an increase in ridership of over 28,000 riders. Those are the ridership impacts. We've also received a large amount of feedback from the general public, both positive and of concerns. A lot of people have noted how much frequency helps them to better be able to use the service. They like how it has quickened the trip up in data. On the concerns, there's some concerns about leaving out Covell Boulevard in data. Along with the loop in South Davis. I hope those are highlighted on the map in the presentation. We went ahead and we took a discussion item to our CAC about possible improvements to the Route 42, in particular how we may better serve the South Davis area. Got a lot of really good feedback. There was discussion about providing the added pedestrian and bike links that are available now due to the route. But there was a lot of discussion also about putting back in the South Davis Park or the addition of the Route 44, which is a discontinued express route. So all of these ideas were talked about, and we were looking to get direction from this board on how to move forward with continuing to improve Route 42 service.
Thank you, Mayor. Do you have any questions, clarifying questions for everyone?
Give a little more background on what prompted the 42 service changes.
So a lot of these changes are prompted the COA that was done by this group. I always thought that they were short-range transit plans, and they keep changing the name. That plan recommended improving transit service in Yolo County by adding more frequency and deep streamlining the route. And so that was a large part of the reason behind it. I also wasn't here during that planning, I know it's a large part of the COA, but the biggest part was about decreasing the trip length that people, the time that people were on the bus, and thus streamlining it in Davis and in downtown Sacramento to make the trip shorter for it also, the COA very much talked about the idea of providing additional frequency on the route, thus giving people more options throughout the day, as the actions have already put out.
Great, and that matches my memory of it as an overall analysis of rebalancing the routing of the robot in order to proceed equity of distribution of the service line, but also to improve service, make sure it's shorter, but then also as a way to more potential service location, knowing that the district is very challenged and has budget perspective of that, as well as all that has to be down close. And we also think that coming out of COVID that there would be a different parameters on the horizon in terms of what riders should recover and how the distribution is going out for the public.
Well, and ridership is up quite a bit for the service that we implement. So it's really good to see that ridership is all across the board for both regular weekdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And as you can see by the 5 months that are in the board packet, all except December were all up, and we actually see that by December. So we're back to UC Davis took all the 3 weeks off.
Absolutely.
It might be too early to tell, but now in the budget season, do you think we'll be this year able to increase service levels?
We are in a strong financial position, as Patrick can hear this, so we talked about the audit a little bit there. We are in a strong financial position. We do still have recovery funds that we can draw down for the time being. Now, long term, obviously those recovery funds are going to run out, and so there is we have to be cognizant of not kind of overcommitting the funds, and extending service that we then have to reduce. But I would say, just in terms of the possibility, but I understand that the board approved the comprehensive operations analysis. It did, the original plan was actually to go to 30-minute headways all day on the Route 42. But then I think that, my understanding, what I heard was the decision was made to put heat just in the morning and the afternoon heat, and then do 45 minutes in the middle of the day. Again, to kind of see how ridership responded and to get a sense of whether or not it would make sense to go to 30-minute headways all day. So that is in the COA, and so it's something that I think we would want to think about with regard to next year. And then of course, one of the things the COA did was it eliminated most of our express routes, including the Route 44, which is for South Davis. And I think some of the feedback that we've heard is, hey, first you eliminated the Route 44, and now the 42 doesn't stop there either. And so if you live in South Davis, you now have to kind of go across the freeway to catch a bus and we'll take you to the Sacramento.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think, appreciate the question that I already asked. I think a couple of key points, especially as it relates to potential historic connectivity to Route 44 and South Davis Express, work with another couple of clients. One, so I personally think it's, I mean, it should be considering doing it. I understand the policy of whether it's a conflict or not. It wasn't, it certainly, the whole thing was South Davis focused, but it also was Central Davis. Especially, say, for Sacramento, coming back into Davis, because it's all up on campus, and it had, it certainly has to be its own, basically through downtown, and so I got to move right down to 34. Yeah, so it's good number here, but, number of riders who use it, makes it regularly, well, not just on Davis. So, in that, it's just that there are other options for Central Davis on the current bus system. But on the 44 is quite additional options for private data. So, if you think that that's what would be, I think, is preferred for us to consider that, for the entire organization, that part of the data, I think, is something that we should. I think it's also important to note, though, that in addition to that, it's like based on the public comment, we're going to be seeing around the improving connections between the buses that are coming from campus or Davis to. They do have, I mean, as part of the staff report, something to talk about the sort of over the course of next year, planning efforts improving those connections. So I think just the whole comment came earlier, I think, to make sure that that is recognized and that we are really committed to make sure those connections are addressed, which is also something part of that as well. So that's really important. And we'd love to know, so question-wise, a couple of questions. One, the sort of, I know the city we have been working on it. Sort of down, sort of rematching, sort of downtown over the transit center. I was curious about that, sort of some timing. I mean, is it something that we have to wait for them to have their official, find the final transit center? Or should we, I mean, remind them to route it,
There is some complexity
certain woodlands. A lot of the streets are narrow, or certain. It's almost like being in downtown Sacramento. You don't have to worry about the lonely streets. You just have to worry about really narrow streets. So the complexity of providing the ground is also very good.
Thanks. And then just as a quick follow-up, that also we're working on improving the connections to that issue. I mean, that seems like between the 42A and 42B and all those riders that were captured in the campus, you know, the connections to like whatever is the 212 and 1 through 212 and 211, yeah, would be really, you know, so I'm just curious about that as well.
The connection between those routes is one that we are working to improve quite a bit. The hard part is the service being 45 minutes. Is opposite of the hour-long trip. So the time needs to, so the schedule is difficult. Now, if we were able to get to 30-minute trips, like was originally planned, it would line up perfectly with an hour-long route because every other 42 trip would connect with a local route. But with the huge 45 round goal difficulty, making sure that connection works.
The 45-minute ones are, I mean, the, are you talking about the 212 and the 211, or are you talking about the 42A and B?
42A and 42B are on 45-minute headways during midday.
But the comments, I think, are mostly around the issues, especially around commute hours, especially the evenings, that the issues of buses showing up. I mean, it's not this one. It's when the 42A and 42B are back off the 30-minute headways. I think are one of some of the issues are occurring.
Correct. And so we could go ahead and probably as we're looking at the Woodlands local service, go ahead and change those. But then what'll happen is it will only work during the commute.
Yeah.
And it won't work during the midday, which is a possibility. But I honestly, I'm looking for kind of a long-term solution that would have all of those work. And running it to 30-minute service would have all of those work.
Yeah, if I can just jump in and put a couple thoughts on this. So, you know, the only change that was envisioned in Woodland in the COA, the Comprehensive Operations Assessment, was the changes to the 42, mm-hmm. and then the reduction of some of the routes in Woodlands. We actually got rid of two of the local routes, and then we're introducing the microtransit service, which will be starting very soon. But, you know, we have been, taking a look at things like going to a transit center in downtown Woodland, right? And so that kind of, there's a number of changes that are kind of rolling out in Woodland sequentially. Unfortunately, it was not all done as part of the comprehensive operations, you know, analysis. So there is a little bit of, like, as Eric's alluding to, well, if we fix it now, we're just going to change it again, you know, a few months from now when we move the services to downtown Woodland. So I guess I would say we're in a period of flux because we're trying to make it better. And on the Woodland Transit Center, you know, I'll just say there was a Woodland Transit Center study that was mostly completed and then never finished in 2019. So we have picked that back up and we have been working with the consultant and we actually now have a revised scope of work that's going to be coming to you for approval to actually finish that so that we can, you know, again, move that forward. So you'll be seeing that. That'll probably be on the consent calendar next month to move that ahead because I think we're there with that. I also just wanted to address one other comment, which is, you know, noted that the County Fair Mall is dark. It does have lighting at the bus stop. There's no electrical air pressure, so we've actually put in like battery walls with solar panels with lighting. So it does have some lighting, but it's not ideal, obviously. And it's part of the reason we want to get out of there because everything's surrounding it. It's an island of light in the bus dark end. So it's not ideal.
Thank you very much for both and agreeing to those.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure, 31. Yeah, I'm in Winters. I'm not in Woodland. I'm not in Davis. I believe that the main route goes through Sherry Chapman's area. And of course, Lucas is from Davis, but I would just echo that these are our values, to provide safety and to make our lines work for people. So I think looking at the 44, you know, with fresh eyes, kind of what we had before and how it would work best today, and also just improving the connections would be, you know, our best use of time and money.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Warren. Yeah, a quick couple follow-up questions. So is the criteria to move it from 45 to 30, is that just pure ridership? I mean, I imagine there's financial, but, like, you know, you're not seeing the ridership. What makes it so you would want to move it, or you could move it to 30?
during the day.
Well, I don't know that the board actually determined exactly how much ridership was justified at that time.
Got it.
So whether or not we've kind of met that criteria, I think it's really a kind of a question we would put back to you. But I would say it's not the only thing that we need to consider. I mean, certainly equity is a key consideration. It's not just about ridership, because if we're only serving, riders from certain neighborhoods and not other people of certain economic, backgrounds and not others, we want to make sure that we're really being mindful of, we have a limited amount of resources to invest, and where are we prioritizing those? So I think another kind of measure that we look at is efficiency in terms of how many, the cost of providing the service relative to the amount of people riding it.
Right.
So actually, even though our highest ridership route is 42, our most productive route in that sense is actually about 215, which goes back to the casino. Because every single one of those buses is packed. So anyway, that's just another kind of thing that we tend to think about in the transportation world, is that kind of how efficient are we being with the use of our dollars.
Yeah, thank you. And I think you touched on the piece I wanted to raise, because as Dr. Warren said, the 44 and 42A here in my district in South Davis, and I have heard from constituents asking about it, right, when we talk about improved transit times and improved connections, oftentimes those are related to rush hour, and there are a lot of folks from an equity standpoint that you've touched on who aren't working in those, right, that those times aren't when they're going to work. They're either leaving work late at night, or they're going early in the morning, or it's the middle of the day, because they're working at 3 to 11, or whatever that may be. So I think it's important to keep that, obviously, our principal value at the forefront of some of these conversations as we move forward. That was more of my conversation, our question around moving from 45 to 30 around folks who aren't working in those normal, quote-unquote, commuter times, and that we keep that in mind as we progress. We're not implying that we're not, but I just wanted to make sure that was noted. Another question I have, is there any way for us to be able to tell currently on the 42 if there are folks who are utilizing it, who are coming over the overpass or finding ways that used to take the 42A, 42B, who are making that walk or going over the house overpass or getting over there to ride that bus? Is there a way for us to track that or better understand where they're coming from?
We don't have that information right now, but if that was something the board wanted us to look at, we could. What we could do is we could have kind of interns. We do have interns that go out and ride the buses and do surveys for us, so we can have people kind of stationed at those stops, probably like 5th and Pole Line and then 5th and Cantrell, I think, so that we can pull the other one where, to 30 people and some more different reasons.
Yeah, I think it would just be interesting to better understand if folks are actually utilizing that, right? We step back and say, hey, we talked to X amount of people today who used to ride 44 or the 42, and they are just walking over, and if it's a small, subset of folks who are really wanting another service back. But I do think it's important to understand and, get a grip around if folks are utilizing that service that used to take 44 or 42. And then I do think I would echo Judge Spur's comments around the 44 and I don't know if it is to bring back the 42, but I do hear on a regular basis from constituents who are quite concerned around the very acute transit because of everything being removed from that area. So we'd love to hear more about that as we progress forward. Sure. Thank you. Dr. Moore?
First, I want to say thank you to staff for trying to thread the needle on this. I think that it's really almost impossible to do, but I just wanted to mention that the people that are having to walk over Cabell, over a large passage way, that it is also an equity consideration to consider who are we asking to do the most walking, what segment of our population. So you could consider that also. I would appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any other questions for staff or public comment? All right. Seeing none, we'll move to public comment. Do we have anyone on Zoom who would like to make a public comment on this agenda item?
We do.
We do. All right. Thank you. Welcome to the public comment.
I'm sure we can down that.
Yes. Hello. I'm Anthony Palmier. I live in Davis, and I'm actually one of the people on the part of the route that got taken away along Covell on that part of the route. But I actually want to say that I hope that you'll keep the route the way it is. I think it's a huge improvement, having it be more direct and more frequent. And I think if we could get it to 30-minute frequency throughout the day, that would solve so many of the problems, because then it would connect with the Unitrans routes that run every 30 minutes and it would also just connect with the woodland roots. And I think it's important when we talk about equity to look at, I mean, the people who are riding the bus, if they're going to be taken out of their way by an extra loop through South Davis or, you know, someplace else, they're going to then be on a longer trip, you know, having to be away from their family longer. I mean, you have to try to balance the equity that the people on the bus are also, they need to get to where they're going in a direct way. And if we can just make it more frequent, this is what, you know, throughout the country, people, transit systems are discovering, that providing more frequent service, even if people have to walk further to get to it, is better for equity because it does serve the people who use the bus better by making it a more direct and faster route. So I think it's great what has been done, and I just encourage you to stick with it and to try to improve it as much as possible in the future.
Okay. Thank you to all the commenters. Do we have any more public comments coming in via Zoom?
No.
All right. Thank you. So we'll move to any public comment for people that are in attendance.
Sure.
Come on.
In case you have you guys. I do have a question for Mr. Rick. What 5 months and what year was that support pulled together from?
So the 5 months are starting in October of 22 through February of 23.
Okay.
So the last 5 months.
I can tell you that the last 5 months do not show what's coming now. our busiest months in my division. Are because we're not on the standard transit schedule for buses. February through March, so these current 4 weeks that just ended this past weekend are very, very busy. And second, we show our month of August to September. And that every year is our busiest month, with homestay packed in Woodland. Aside from that, you've probably seen in the past fall quarter, pretty general what's going to be happening in spring for us, but our business is based on a lot of what happens in the world economy, and with COVID, of course, we were slammed down. My department's basically, no, we're now getting bigger. We're now growing again. I can't tell you what's going to happen, how fast, but it'd be wonderful to see another 5 or 6 months review done, even if you go through with what you're planning. Do it again in another year. And include all of February and March, or include July through September. We have youth programs coming. I can tell you right now, this coming weekend, we have, I believe, 30 of our students are leaving, most of which are placed in Woodland on Saturday, but Sunday we have 42 youth arriving, and 80% of that group will be living in Woodland, and I'll be taking the bus with them. So these are some of the things that we do. In South Davis, I used to take the 44, which became the 243. I'd love to see the 44 come back. The 243, that period of that route, I always wished it would stop at Memorial Union. It would do a backup to the 42A that's currently overpassed at 543. So again, if we could come to the half hours for throughout the day, that would be wonderful. If we could at least add one more early in the earlier part of the evening rush hour or afternoon rush hour, that would be really helpful now until things become different later.
Thank you for your comments.
And that was just asked the commenter. She can leave us her contact info after this.
Absolutely.
We can follow up with her for other questions.
Thank you. Sure, come on up.
Alan Hirsch, I'm concerned that basically we have a local cities that not put enough attention on signal priorities, so buses get preempted, so you go through buses of speed with clearly buses carrying 20 or 30 people should be priority over small truck cars. I'm not sure we're doing that and forcing that as priority. I think a list of all the stop lights we're going through and where they are in signal priority and where we have the status would be a useful addition. I also, in terms of Anthony's comment about express buses, and then local service, the last mile problem. On the I-80 thing, we could put bus stops right along the freeway. And we connect the local buses. So the buses on the freeway would go up the mountain really fast, and they'd get off and be a kind of transfer with the local system. In Davis, that would work quite well with the Unitrans system. So some of that hasn't been studied. And as a matter of fact, another thing, so I don't understand why that hasn't been studied as an alternative. A real regional transit using buses along with the buses. And I wonder, why we haven't looked at the bus sidewalk. I hope that's a tough one. Bus rapid transit, the single branch and the bus stops right along I-80. Oh, and the other thing was, why aren't we looking at huge up lanes to get onto the causeway? We know we'll drag the causeway fast, and then it's congested. As soon as it gets traffic, speeds up. We can have a bus ramp lane. There were basically ride buses who will land on the shoulder, jump around congestion, and get on the freeway. That'd be much less expensive than basically restriping the causeway. And we can do that quite quickly. But that wasn't an alternative study. That's what happened. And that works, because we know that's what's happened in the Bay Area on the Bay Bridge. Because they can't mind the Bay Bridge, they had huge jump lanes for the buses. But that wasn't an alternative study on I-80. So we're not really making a full transit study on the I-80 widening to make transit a priority. So, but the 42 buses we have, express buses, and we have local buses, and we differentiate between those two. But thank you for putting the priority on 42 buses and move forward, but we need to take it all the way. Thank you.
Thank you for your public comment. Anyone else here in person would like to make a public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment and come back to my colleagues if there's anything further on this information item. All right, seeing none, we'll move along. We just bring to attention that this is not easy, stepping back and looking at ridership and volume and times and bus stops and elimination and sort of COVID in the middle of it, and you have what we're sitting here looking at today. So thank you for your work on this. It's not an easy task, and I appreciate the folks who are here and the folks that have left and my colleagues who continue to work on this, and this is a situation that will probably be in front of us for a while now. So thank you. So with that, we'll move along to agenda item number 6, branding for relaunch of microtransit service from your ride to V-Line.
Yeah, good evening, board members. Thank you for having me tonight. My name is Christopher Kwan Lee. I'm the marketing communication specialist for YellowTV. And tonight I'm excited to talk about the rebranding of microtransit. As you may know, since October 2019, we've been operating Your Ride, which stands for Yellow Bus Urban Rural. And it's the current branding of our microtransit service. And unfortunately, at the time, there was a lacking in marketing professionals who could help develop this brand identity. So therefore, our brand identity wasn't really developed and implemented. Because of the fact that we are currently in the works of launching the new microtransit service in Woodland and transitioning to the new RideCo app, we have decided that it would just make sense if we just also gave proper branding to our microtransit service. Over the last 3 months, I've worked together with my marketing and communication team along with other members of the community, especially putting together a microtransit branding community, which has representatives from the city of Woodland, Winters, and West Sacramento. And we spent a lot of time collaborating and discussing what we want in microtransit branding and the future of that. So some of the things that we wanted was definitely something more contemporary, recognizable, and of course, iconic to Yolo County. Because of that, I spent time along with some of my staff, and we have developed something that I believe would be wonderful to have for our microtransit service. So tonight, I am proud to introduce to you V-Line On-Demand Transit by Yolo Bus. This brand identity was created as a nod to the vast agriculture business here in Yolo County, and also basically gives you an idea of what microtransit is. These are the type of creatures that don't wander and they go where they need to be. And that's exactly what microtransit is. So if we can go to the next slide. Here we have a bit of the brand concept for you with some graphic elements of what you can expect to see on our microtransit vehicles and for the future marketing. So, a little bit of play on words here. We do V-Line to your destination, and that's exactly what microtransit is. It gets you to point A to point B, and we hope to that this brand identity is exciting to you all as it is to me, and with the colors and everything, I'm sure it will make a big impact, not only for our agency, but to our community, and hopefully people will become very excited as we see these vehicles roll around. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I'll bring it back to the board. Any follow-up questions or comments? Yeah, wait. We're all good? All right. Yeah, absolutely.
Just real quick, thinking about making sure that riders in the community see that they're part of Yellowkin, and your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so one of the key things that we're going to do, and especially when we rebranded YoloCD, right, is to make sure that logo is everywhere and a part of this. As you saw in, like, the first slide, we made sure that, sorry, Heather, can you go back one? Yes.
Yeah.
We made sure that it's going to, like, when we market E-Line, it's always going to say on-demand transit by YoloBus. And on top of that, the YoloCD logo will follow along with that, depending on the marketing material as well. So we want to make sure that the public knows, because YoloBus is already a recognizable brand, they also know that this is a public transit service and that this, is part of our system as well.
Thank you. Yes,
everyone. I was fortunate enough to be on the committee, you know, looking at all the different, you know, conversations and artwork and ideas. And, you know, although I abstained from the final vote because I knew it was going to come here, I love the B-Line. I love the idea that there's the Honey Festival here in Woodland, that there's the bee business here, Man Like Bee, this giant corporation, that there's the honey, what is it, Haagen-Dazs, bee
Haven.
Yeah, in Davis. That there's, you know, in Winters and in Westpac and all throughout Davis and Woodland, there's orchards that have, you know, all the bee boxes. So the bees have been part of our communities, and the bee goes where the sweet spots are, right? It goes where it needs to go. And so I think that it's a really positive way to look at transportation. And my only ask is that I know that it might be possible to have a branded number that's like B-Line, even if it's a dummy number, so that people just dial that number and order that bus. But I just want, you know, I want it to be so friendly to the community and so easy to ride. And then my last little comment on there is that in many of our communities there are commuter buses that are small and white, and they kind of all look alike, and it's hard to tell which one is coming, whether it's from a senior residency center or not. And this is just going to pop and say, here we are, and we're here to do business. So I'm just really excited about the rollout.
Thank you, Director. Anyone else has your comment?
Yeah. Yeah.
We will move to public comments. Do we have any public comments from anyone attending on Zoom?
We do not.
We do not. Thank you. Any public comment for attendees in the room? Sure, come on.
I'm not very familiar with your line or your bus. I've tried to look into what it actually does. I have to admit that the website could really use an update. Okay. On such things. But while I'm here, I'm going to ask, is this something different, like if I had a student with physical disability of some sort or just a difficulty, and that student needed a ride from Woodland to Davis and Davis to Woodland every day, is that the kind of service I could set up on the B-Line?
So, we do have, the B-Line is actually only served currently, it goes for trips from Knights Landing to Woodland and also from Winter to either Davis or Vacaville. We do separately have what we call our YoloBus Special, which is our paratransit service, which can take people from, you guys, what you're talking about, from Woodland to Davis.
I've contacted them in my business. It doesn't help very much when we have a four-week program. The student arrives and I realize what's needed. And when I contacted the office to find out, what do I do with the paperwork? How fast does this happen? It takes a minimum of 3 weeks to pretty much receive a response, whether it's yes or no. So my students are going to be gone already. It's just not a process that's happening fast enough to help us. And I have to keep that what we need in mind. But I know that there is the same service, type of service in Davis, but they only work within Davis. So I guess I would love to see what qualifying someone for that specialty bus will happen faster. Maybe streamline their processing. We all know we can do that in every office.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sure. Any other comment here?
Hi. Just leveraging off Jesse's comments, because obviously senior centers have buses, too, as well as we do. I wonder if some of these features, now that the public agencies are stepping forward, they will cut back their services and rely on the public service. And that puts the burden on the public versus their previous absorption of that. I'm not sure what we want to do, but I think we should keep an eye on that. We should figure out who's doing, who puts better credit for providing the service now. And if they cut that, the board should be aware of that. We should deal with that there. Maybe we do want a public, maybe a public, or there's synergy there, but it's a shifting of financial burden. So we need to provide the mobility, but who pays for it is always an issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any more public comment from anyone in attendance here this evening on this agenda? All right, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. If anyone has any more questions or entertain a motion?
I'm having this item, and I do have a question as well, too.
Absolutely.
I'm really excited about it. I think it's really exciting to see this move forward, and I really like the branding. The question I have, there's sort of two questions, actually. One is, was the community advisory committee sort of consulted or that at all as part of this, ever just go to that body, I didn't see it. I think I saw it in the staff report, so that's one question. And then secondly, super excited that Living Winters of West Sacramento were part of the branding conversation. UC Davis, City of Davis, Yolo County, were they part of the branding conversation at all?
So unfortunately, those agencies were not part of the conversation, just because we were looking at more like immediate people who could be a part of like this community, who, because like we are launching this service in those particular areas. But we did consider, like the community did consider like places like Davis and make sure that that was part of the conversation. Like board member Lauren just, you know, discussed like there were all these industries in Davis that were brought up as well when we were formulating the branding for this.
And I would just add that we included the City of West Sacramento, because given their experience with microtransit, we figured that they would have some, you know, some valuable insight, even though we don't operate microtransit service.
And then the community advisory committee in place for feedback?
We did not bring the system advisory committee for feedback.
Thank you. Any other?
I'll check at the item.
All right. All right. We have a motion by Ferris and second by Lind. Any other discussion comments? All right. Seeing none, we'll vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? All right. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you for all your work. All right. And with that, we will move to agenda item number 7, changes to the board meeting time and or location.
All right. So this is a continuation of a discussion that began in January board meeting around potentially changing either the time of the meeting or potentially the location as well. And so that kind of was the conversation that we had in January. We kind of left the topic open to kind of get a bit more information. And so what we did is, as staff, we asked, we sent a survey to all of you board members, to our voting board members, I should say, and ask for your feedback with regards to those two questions. And what we've done is just simply share the responses that we received in here. So if you could go to the next slide. So the first question we asked is, what is your preference regarding the location of board meetings? The first option, all board meetings should rotate between the member jurisdictions. This is an idea that was brought up in January. One director selected this response. The second option was all board meetings should be able to visit the OLTD office. Three directors selected this response, and there was a couple of other options there, but nobody selected those responses. So those are the two responses we received. Those are the four responses we received. That's how they were split. We go to the next slide. On the board meeting time, obviously currently second Monday at 7 p.m., one option was to start at 4 p.m. and three directors selected that response. One option was to start at 6 p.m. One director selected that response. Interestingly, keeping it at 7 p.m., zero directors selected that response. And there was also maybe a 5 p.m. in there and nobody selected that response either. So that's the feedback we received. So, you know, and I would just say from staff perspective, you know, we're happy to follow the board's lead on this study. There's not a staff recommendation in there. My only comment would be that from a public comment perspective, I think having the meetings towards the end of the day is positive. If we were considering like a 9 a.m. board meeting or a noon board meeting, I would say it would be very difficult for people who have full-time jobs, but as long as we're keeping it kind of towards the end of the day, I think, you know, we're in a sweet spot as far as public comment goes. So that would be my only kind of input to the board with regard to that, and we would just love to hear, you know, your direction, your discussion and direction on this.
Sure, thank you. So I think maybe what we could do, if my colleagues are okay, maybe we kind of break this into the two separate pieces that we have before us, maybe tackle the location of the board meeting first and then go to the time piece, if that works for my colleagues.
Sure.
Okay, perfect. And then we want to do public comment first on this, and then we can jump into it. Okay, all right, perfect. So are there any public comments from people attending this meeting on Zoom?
There are not.
So public comments. Thank you. Any public commenters here in person tonight? Come on up.
Yes, Alan Hirsch. We are about to come into some of the most interesting and most controversial parts of your decision, the I-80 project that you want there. You want to make sure that the legitimacy of your decisions are solid, and you make it, you facilitate public input. Because in just a matter of a messy project, and it's a messy problem for you. I'm sorry if I'm boring some people. Texting. Public, you are basically now discussing the tolling in a private ad hoc subcommittee, and you will announce the results 72 hours ahead of the time for the meeting. That's just uninvolved. I don't think that's very appropriate. 4 o'clock meetings are when people are taking the bus, they're fun riders, and also when people are working or commuting home. So 4 o'clock would not be appropriate. And people cannot show up. Even when people call in, the voices are not being heard. I gather people called in today, but those inputs are not shared with the public yet at this point. I'm quite concerned about the legitimacy of that, about your facilitating public involvement. There has been a lot of publicity about this thing. There's been a lot of representations about the idea that to reduce congestion, and some of your flyers are certainly appropriate. There's a representation that you are, it's a sustainable project. I don't know what sustainable freeway expansion is, that's not appropriate. The problem is you guys are going to do a lot at a calc at this point. And I really urge you to be, listen to the public and be that mediator and not basically cut yourself off and get by having a meeting in the afternoon where people can't attend, where people are concerned that they're not attend, especially commuters. You've already not set out agendas public twice in the last 2 months. I've obtained them, but I haven't gotten them. That's a violation. Last month, we didn't publish public posts the meetings appropriately. I didn't raise that. That was an issue. I had a friend, Anthony Plummer, called in. He couldn't get it on the meeting's agendas because the Zoom meeting link wasn't appropriate on the agenda. We have problems with public input right now. Keep continuing to change things. I don't think it's appropriate. We have so many basics we have to do now. Please keep the meetings in the evening so people can facilitate, can easily get in and provide public comment, public input to your body. I think that's appropriate. And also I'm quite concerned that you aren't at all curious about the comprehensive multimodal plan. We haven't even discussed with the release of the DEIS is next month. And certainly you might have a hearing on that. I'm surprised that wasn't in the long range calendar. You should be in a place to take care of them. Thank you very much.
All right, any other public commenters?
I'll follow up a little bit on what he's saying. He's right about the website, and as you said earlier, the only reason I was able to figure out where your meetings were and when was because I'm comfortable calling and emailing someone at the dispatch fairly regularly. It would be nice, no matter what you decide on your decision, to please update the website so that your meetings are more currently scheduled. Right now, it's still listed in 7:22. As far as what time goes, I have to admit it's more convenient for me at 7 o'clock at night. But I can say that I'm lucky. I have flexibility with my employment, so if I need to be here at 4, I'll be here. And, of course, I'm sure you're thinking already of people who might not be. So, thank you.
Thank you. I'll just turn to staff real quick to get any kind of clarifications you would like to make on some of the comments that were made, please.
Sure. As far as the Zoom link not working, we do have people participating. We'll certainly follow with Mr. Palmer to understand what happened there. With regard to the website, we do have a fairly recently updated website, and last time I checked today, the agenda was posted. It looks like it's still there, so I'm not sure sure what's happening, but, you know, maybe it has to do with different browsers, such as sometimes being on different devices can impact the quality of being able to see what's on the website, but.
Thank you.
And just a couple things. I think, yeah, there could be issues potentially with some people's browsers or something. I just printed this agenda off of the website for this evening meeting, I mean, about an hour ago. So I think the website, at least
I was not emailed a copy of the agenda.
So I was just responding to the public comment around here. One thing I did notice, though, I think it does relate to the issue of public participation with regard to meetings, is that if you go to YOLOBUS's website, there is another tab for the YOLO TD item. And you have to go very specifically to YOLO TD website sort of or tab on, you know, to actually access meeting materials. I think we should have that meeting materials should be able to be accessed whether you're on YOLOBUS or YOLOTD, or I think the other one is YOLO Connect, I think is the other item. So there are definitely in the right tabs at the top, but I think that was definitely, that there is a challenge there. There's no question. I mean, it's not intuitive. So even though there's been an updated website, which looks great, it's not really intuitive. So I do think that there is a sort of potential need for a bit of a change there. With regard to the item that's before us, the potential times and locations, having served on many boards over the last 10 years. Now my full-time job is being on the board of supervisors where the meetings are during the day at 9 o'clock in the morning. I've seen public agencies meet all times of the day. 8:30 in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, 4 p.m., 5 p.m., 3 p.m., 8, 7 p.m. So, and Davis City Council meetings sometimes go till next morning, as you all know. So starting in the evening and going till early next morning. So no time is sort of the best time in terms of public participation. I agree that 4 p.m. I think is not really ideal. Most people who are working at 4 p.m. during also normal working days hours. So I would be certainly supportive of either staying the status quo. 7 p.m. is fine, but if there is a desire to move the meeting a little bit earlier, I'm fine with that as well, but I do not favor 4 p.m. I think that vast majority of those people that work sort of daytime, normal hours are working at 4 p.m., and so I think it's not very convenient for folks to attend 4 p.m. in the afternoon meetings, as much as it might be convenient for board members to attend 4 p.m. meetings. Also, a number of us are working as well, too, so I don't think that's or is really an ideal time. And then in terms of the second Mondays, that day of the week, speaking on Mondays, second Mondays, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then I also think with regard to the preference of location, I think now that we are required to be back in person, I think that the vast majority of our meetings should be held here. I think this room was purpose-built for it, and not all of the local governments that our members of YOLOBUS have the ability to host all the meetings and have them televised sort of simultaneously with Zoom and such. So I think that hosting the meetings here at YTD's headquarters building makes the most sense to me. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
Yeah, for
sure. I think that this is another like threading the needle type item, but if we're taking it one at a time, the preference to regarding the location of the meeting would be here because the equipment is here, staff is here, this is the transportation center, this is why we built this. I think that it needs to remain here. If there's a really large issue that's central to one city, I think that we can have the conversation on the dais about possibly addressing the needs of that city or providing a bus like we did tonight's landing to allow people to come, but I think it makes sense to maintain having meetings here. And then, so, meetings here. to cut to the simplicity of the item. And then, as far as the time, so, I mean, personally, you know, I work in Woodland, so, it doesn't attack me that much. But I think if you're a mom, you know, kids, you know, coming here at 7 or, you know, staying till 9 or whatever, it's really difficult. Working until 5, how could you attend a meeting? I think it cuts into the availability of the public. So I would support after 5 or 6 or 7. I mean, at 4, it's just too early. I mean, you know,
people are still working at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a, going from a 7 o'clock meeting to 4 would, I think, disenfranchise a bit of the public. And that is not something that we would want to do. I guess if I'm threading the needle with a vote, I don't know, 5 or 6 makes the most sense to me. I wish I could pick one. However, I'd like to hear, you know, from other people on 5 or 6 and maybe take 4 off the table.
Sure.
Yeah. So real quick, and state that I don't have a preference. Sorry. Happy to participate. We appreciate the opportunity, appreciate the role, and whenever we can best fit into your schedule and accommodate making the media useful, that's really what we're after. My instinct is the same. This is a great location. I should be after work hours, but it's always going to be good for some people when it's good for us. So, thank you.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for your comments. So I'm very similar in thought to where my colleagues are. I do think that this is where the meeting should be held, and that's what I voted for when we voted. I think this, to me, is like City Hall or like the chambers at the Board of Supervisors. It's where business is held. That's why this room is here. I also think it does provide a connection to this organization that wouldn't be provided in a different, in Davis City Hall or Woodland City Hall or in Winters. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think this is where it's at, right? This is the hub. This is the people that we are serving in one of the communities that we serve. So I do think it's important to be here. So I would vote to have our meeting stay here. And I agree with you, Dr. Lamar. If there's something that comes up and we want to have a conversation around, you know, having a different location because of, you know, a really important issue that's before us, then I'd be willing to have that conversation. So, on meeting location, I am definitely in favor of having it here. I am fine going, to 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock. Either way, I am indifferent on both of those times. I think with the votes that are there, it's clear that it seems the board wants to move somewhat earlier. So I would take, you know, 7 off the table, and I'm happy to support if anyone here has a strong opinion on 6 or 5. Between my colleagues, I am happy to support either one of those. So it really does not matter to me in terms of 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock.
That's real from guys here. I understand that it's difficult, you know, to be here late, but I know the most conservative approach would be to take 4 and 7 off and just move it 1 hour earlier and see, you know, if it impacts public comment or participation. I think that's the most conservative case. And I'll make a motion that we continue to have our meetings here, and if there's a special circumstance that we have that conversation on the dais, and that we move our meetings to 6 p.m.
I'll second that motion. Any further questions, comments related to this agenda item?
I had just one other quick comment. I think it's really important that we continue to serve the hybrid option of Zoom. And it's clearly, you know, members of the public are participating in Zoom as well and have the ability to comment as sort of almost in real time as well. But I think that is very important. It allows for additional participation and not have to everybody have to come to Woodland for the first meeting. So I understand we, as the board members, are not allowed to do that now that state law has changed, but the emergency, the executive order has expired. But I think that it's really important that as an agency we continue that sort of that hybrid option. So, but happy to support the motion that's before us.
Thank you, Dr. Perez. All right, we will move to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? All right, motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. And just one point of clarification, thanks to our legal counsel, that we will need to officially amend the bylaws. So we will fully bring that back as a consent calendar item for the next meeting.
May I ask a question related to Director Sarah's comments? So in the city of Winters, when, you know, the orders expired, we voted to continue to have, to be able to have our elected members attend in an emergency situation on Zoom. Does that exist here? I'm pretty sure we didn't support that when we voted, but can you clarify?
Next day, Myra Vega would be here tonight on because she is an alternate. Is there some way that that is legal under an emergency situation?
So the new law does, as long as you have the technological capability to allow both the live public comment, both by the officials in absence or wanting to participate remotely or teleconference essentially, and the public, that is a possibility. There's a limitation on how many times you can do that. And obviously, at least the majority has to be here in person. But you're right that to have that emergency exception, the board has to approve that. So that's something when we bring back the bylaws that we can do. It's my understanding that wasn't officially addressed or voted on yet. So obviously, last minute request is difficult. But if we can come up with that in the bylaws to allow for that type of scenario, we could certainly do that.
I would appreciate if that would come back. We are from as far away as West Sacramento. We have other child care and other taking care of parents, all those other duties that normal people have. So that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Moving along to agenda item number 8, draft zero emission bus rollout plan. We'll turn that over to our staff.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Nathan Media. My name is Cody Williams. I'm one of their new senior planners with that OSPD. So today I'm going to present to you a few items from what we'll be working on, which is our zero emission bus rollout plan. For context, this plan is a requirement for all transit agencies statewide from the Air Resources Board. However, it is not fully binding to YOLOTD, meaning we don't have to do exactly what we project to do in order to meet our requirement for converting to full zero emission. We still need to have board approval, so right now I'm just providing an outline of the key elements that we have. At our meeting in, I believe, May, you will get the full, before that, you will have the full plan. And I've also already presented to our Citizens Advisory Committee, who I'll present to you as well. So they are aware of the date of this presentation. Next slide. So a little context. So the zero emission, in 2018, the Air Resources Board initiated what is the Innovative Clean Transit Regulation. This basically established the requirement that all transit agencies statewide need to convert their fleet to zero emission by 2040. Within that, that is specifically for their buses. So even though we do have paratransit, in our plan we will also include that our paratransit vehicles later on will go to zero emission, in addition to our microtransit shuttles. That will be on a longer projected timeline, but for now this will just focus on the buses that we have. And so next slide. So right now, the chart that you see is our current fleet of buses. We currently have 44 buses that will be procuring, or be phasing out to zero emission. Most of our buses are CNG, although we do have diesels for our MCIs that are mainly running the shuttle service for the Q15. And then we do have the Proterras that we are using for our commuting route with SACRP. And so, right now, this is basically what this says to you guys and what we'll show CARB is this is the amount of buses we have to convert, and that just gives us our baseline so we know. And next slide. So this is probably the most important part that we have here. So we already have our projected schedule. On the left is the total amount of buses, and then as you can see, the dates, each highlighted black cell is when we plan to procure those amount of buses. 2036 is highlighted in green because that's when we expect to be our full conversion to zero emission. What you're seeing towards the end from 2037 to 2040 is just the remainder of our converting fleet as our buses end their useful life. So we have mixed fleet right now currently. It wouldn't make sense for us to just abandon all those buses. I can speak for Eric saying we're going to use all of our buses to their fullest extent. So with that, this schedule of what you're seeing is just how we plan to procure buses, and what the date that you're seeing is the date of procurement, not delivery. So in the zero emission bus regulation, really the requirement is that the agencies have to their procurement has to be completed by 2040. We are going to meet that goal in 2036. So just to let you know that we're going to be ahead of the requirement from CARB, in which we need to be fully converted to zero emission. Again, there are certain delays that will kind of be in the report that could happen in relation to if there are supply chain issues, if we have
you know, any financial concerns that could lead to like a recession that could delay manufacturers with getting us the buses. So a lot of those unknowns will be accounted for in the report. And again, the Air Resources Board just wants to make sure that we have a board-approved conversion plan and that, you know, the public has a chance to know that we're committed to doing this as part of the regulation. So let's see, next slide. The next slide is really a timeline for completion for when this report is gone through at least the elements, the most important elements, meaning how many buses does the LOTD have, what's our schedule for procuring our zero-emission buses. So within that, I've presented to the Citizens Advisory Committee and both you. Now I'll be finishing the report. We'll be reviewing that internally with the planning team. Then we'll have our send out the final report both to you and the, I'll just say the CAC. And then and then from there we'll have I'll have the month of May basically to incorporate any comments or feedback that you or the CAC have before going again to present. And then by June is when after you guys have approved this plan, we'll go to CARB and then the OT will be good. So I believe that's it. Heather, for slides. So just providing you a brief presentation, but really just letting you know that this is a plan that we're working on, and the biggest elements, meaning the buses we have and our schedule to convert, we are in good shape. And so we'll definitely make sure that you have the final plan and enough time to review that one.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any clarifying questions for Mr. Wayne before we go to public comment?
Just a quick comment. I think I appreciate this very much so, and I really appreciate sort of the hearing what the community, the Citizens Advisory Committee sort of back and forth, like, you know, sort of the items that they raised and sort of that discussion was very helpful. I appreciate it. I think it's many issues around hydrogen fuel cell versus battery electric and sort of the, you know, issues with some of the electric buses having challenges in the summer heat as an example. So I appreciate all that detail. Thank you.
Mine is asked a quick question, kind of talking to me. So, while the procurement, the rates and, you know, the timeline for it, what are the types of infrastructure upgrades, forgive me if you're not knowing this from you as a board, if this is already been talked about, assuming you could go at length on it, or what needs to happen here to prepare for the upgrades to the electric vehicles?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So that will be in the final plan. Okay. Just off the, some of the things right now we have to look at is our current facility, and then if we'll need an additional facility. Currently, we've identified a location off of Barber in West Sacramento that could be a secondary area where you could charge some of our buses. But right now, we really have to begin talks with PG&E. And this is kind of, in the plan, it won't be as detailed in a sense of the final cost. It'll be all estimates. So I just want to make that note. But I would say on the infrastructure side, it's going to be a complete overhaul of our current facilities here because currently the C&D. And so we're already looking at basically we have a full solar array in the back of our our yard. So yeah, we'll have to basically do a full array of solar for our bus yard. We'll have to fully convert our maintenance facilities, and then we're also going to have to train our staff and work on zero emission buses because with the contract we have with Proterra, that's they've been the ones doing a lot of the service and maintenance. So that's something that we're going to have to now work with, getting our own team involved, our maintenance staff, that I kind of learned that. So another reason I do want to point out with the schedule is why in 2026 we're expecting to start is that we need this planning time right now. So once the plan that is submitted and is approved by CARB, we basically got a cushion of 2023 to 2026 to go into like a deeper planning analysis of like how essentially understanding what is the final bus that we're going to choose to procure? Is it going to be fuel cell or battery electric? We know it sounds good, but we still have to do our due diligence for what's going to be practical and most cost efficient. And then in terms of facilities, that'll be harder if you have to end up needing more facilities beyond what we currently have, in addition to identifying right-of-way that's close enough that works with our service so we don't have to necessarily change our routes again, as kind of Bob said earlier, to accommodate this. So there's still a lot of unknowns that we're going to be evaluating even after this plan is completed. I'd say it's really the first stepping stone to at least identify the total buses we have, the energy sources that we're looking to convert our buses to, and our timeline for procurement. But in terms of those heavier details, that'll probably come in like a further analysis or another study as we get going towards finally deciding what bus we're going to implement, who's going to be the contractors, and what type of infrastructure is really going to be finalized to be needed, and how long is that going to take. So those, just want to like add some context for that too.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a challenge and a lot of work, because you, in theory, you'll have buses that are currently running now, clean natural gas buses, at the same time as some of these other buses will be coming in that will need a whole different type of infrastructure system here in place, right? So that's going to be a difficult task ahead, but sounds like we've got a number of controls.
Yes, and we're doing that now too currently. So we do have electric Proterras we're operating, and we do have some insight early on just with, you know, one route. So, but yeah, it'll be fun, you know?
Yeah, I like that you did it as you described that as fun. Maybe let me go. All right, so with that, we'll open it up to public comment. Do we have any public commenters attending our meeting on Zoom?
We do not.
Okay, thank you. Anyone in the audience here in person that would like to make a public comment on this agenda item? All right, well, seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to my colleagues. Any final questions, comments?
I do.
I'll just go real quick. UC Davis is doing the same thing with U-Trans fleet, so that might be resource to kind of get their insight into some of the pinch points that they might be experiencing. And then I think the district still has an MOU with Unitrans for backup fueling during emergencies, and maybe the same thing could be adjusted for electric charging or the type of support that might be needed for lease conversion. But that's it.
Thank you. Dr. Morris?
I'm so grateful that Davis is represented here. Thank you for your comments. I just wanted to highlight something that in the packet that is from the CAC. What is the resiliency plan for using an all-electric fleet considering the issues with Proterra buses shutting down during service operations due to high heat in the summer? And it's all answered in the packet, but I just really value that part of the solution is resiliency. So not replacing the buses so fast without considering that they have to be able to withstand the very high heat here and climate change that is already happening.
And I'll just make a note too that not just us, but there are other transit agencies that have had issues with Proterra to the point where they've actually prevented some of their future procurements. So that's something that while we've noticed, we still intend to use for full useful life of those buses. And I believe right now we've kind of, you know, we haven't taken a bus, but the two major manufacturers that are both local are New Flyer and Gillig, and they're located in Hayward and Livermore, so they're very close. So I think as we get closer, we'll be able to kind of build a stronger relationship with who we end up deciding once we go through that procurement process and who ends up taking the bid. So, we definitely have a lot to learn, but we know, at least for now, that that's probably the direction the policy trends will.
I have another one. It seems to me that there are carve-outs, exceptions for listed vehicles, like, for example, for the dumps, for lack of a better word, they have really heavy trucks, and they use CNG. I believe that they use our CNG, right? They fuel here. There's a carve-out for them. Do you anticipate any legislative changes that might allow for more carve-outs? Because I'm just thinking that we're going to still have CNG for a long time, even if we meet these goals, because other services have carve-outs.
Yeah, so there are, in the final report, we'll have a list of the grant programs we plan to pursue that do have incentives for zero-emission vehicles. Additionally, we can also have recommendations that we provide to CARB in our plan, and so it's a little early, not you guys can see in the final yet, but one of the recommendations I had for CARB was at least on the resiliency side, like making sure that there's an agreement on energy pricing regionally, especially if, you know, we end up using the same source as UC Davis, and having some type of partnership with, you know, the Energy Commission, just so that way we're not subject to kind of the rate, kind of intermittent pricing depending on what's happening in the environment. So that's just kind of just in the ask. But there are things like that that we're looking at, we've recommended the CARB. So if you do have other proposals, when you get a chance to look at the draft, full draft, just please let me know and I can include them. But I do think that's important and something they're not fully looking at yet is how do we not just users for the next 5 years, but moving forward. And that's going to kind of bring about, I think, a bigger need of us to collaborate with regions.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you for that. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to having this come before us in a couple months.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. And with that, we'll move on to our last agenda item number 9. It is the fiscal year 21-22 year-end flows and audit findings. And we'll turn that over to Shalom.
Yes. Hi, thank you. I'm Leo Levinson, the interim CFO. It's a real pleasure to be here in person with the board members. And I want to apologize for the typo on the screen, and I guess it was in the board report. This is the year ending June 30th, 2022. not 2021. And I'm going to be really brief. It's a long report. There are a lot of numbers in it, and we have a partner from our audit firm available for questions on Zoom. So I really just wanted to mention the brief highlights I have in the board report and give the maximum time, also a little time to introduce Nash, Brian Nash, and then really if there are questions, devote the time to that, to those questions. So just a few highlights. Our auditors found our disclosures to be clear and consistent and no difficulties or disagreements with us, which we're very glad of. Our net position did decrease by $2.6 million. I wanted to highlight that. That's not because of a big loss of cash or anything like that. That's primarily depreciation, which we know about, that our bus fleet has been getting older. We're not replacing it in the last year or two. And so that is an advantage of our audit is to point that out, is to remind us that our fleet is getting older. So that's the primary reason for the decrease in our net position is depreciation. It was offset a little by some improvements in things like our retiree health trust due to investment returns there. We're still in a strong cash position. Our current assets exceed our current liabilities by about $9 million. We hold about over $3.50 of current assets for every dollar in current liabilities. So we're in a strong position there. Our net current assets decreased by about $800,000. That was budgeted. So during that year, we budgeted to use fund balance. The prior year, we had used a lot of CARES Act funding. We had built out some fund balance, and so there's a signaling to use fund balance in the year. So that was pretty much as expected. There was just one audit finding in our finding federal expenditures. We made a mistake in a spreadsheet, $12,000 out of our $2.1 million. We're grateful to the auditors for pointing it out so that we were able to inform FDA about it rather than the other way around. They were very pleased with the proactiveness, and we're working with them on exactly how they'd like us to return those funds. And we've made a commitment to process improvements to prevent that in the future. So those were the main points I wanted to mention. And the other two things that normally public agencies are concerned about, we're very fortunate not to have it be a large concern, is our pension obligations. For such a small agency with a small number of staff, those are relatively small. Our net pension liability is under $1 million, it's about $800,000, it's very affordable, and we've been paying that at our regular schedule. With CalPERS and our OPEB liability, which is such a concern for many agencies, luckily it's not for us, due to foresight, prior recommendations from my predecessors, there's a trust fund established for our retiree health. It's actually now overfunded compared to our liability, we have about $1.4 million in assets in it, and about $1 million liability. So our plan, actually, we put it into place for this year's budget, was that we would not need to use our current assets for the retiree health obligations this year, but we plan to bill our trust fund for it since we're overfunded, and we'll monitor that in the future and make sure we're still in good shape with that. And so those are the main points I wanted to highlight, and I'd like to turn it over to Brian Nash, who's a partner with Richardson & Co. And I'll do.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Nash.
Can you hear me now? I think I unmuted myself. So I think Leo had a pretty good summary of the year end. The only issue we had was just a spreadsheet issue. There were some numbers that didn't get updated in the spreadsheet. So very simple, kind of easy to do error. It's a very complicated spreadsheet. So that's all been taken care of. One thing I'd like to point out, maybe I'd point this out to add to what Leo said, It's important for transit agencies to have a little bit of funds available. The district has net position at June 30 that equated to about 8 months of operations expenses. It's very important for transit agencies to have a little bit of funds in reserve to draw on because the grants can sometimes be slow to pay. So that's a metric I always like to point out. Coming through the pandemic with all the concerns that we had to be in the situation that you're in, I think everybody's pretty fortunate to be where we are, considering where we could have been after the pandemic and shutting down service and all of those things. So, to mirror what Leo said, the audit went really well. We had just a couple of adjustments going through the audit. One of them was related to that spreadsheet issue with the federal awards. We recorded the fair value adjustment on the county pool. That's kind of an unusual adjustment. Usually it's immaterial, but with the interest rates spiking at the end of the year because the Federal Reserve Bank raised interest rates, it created an unrealized loss on the investment pool at the county. So that was one adjustment that was kind of unexpected and we posted during the audit. One of the things we have, if there are issues to recommend, we have a management letter, but we do not have one this year because there was really no other issues to point out other than the issue and the findings. Staff did a very good job. With all the grants that exist, it's really complicated to do the accounting for your little agency. You'd be very surprised if you got into the detail. They did a very good job of accounting for all the activity, especially all the different funding sources that you have. That's kind of my little summary. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have some.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Do we have any questions for Mr. Nash or Mr. Levinson? All right, seeing none, we will open up public comment. Do we have any public comment for anyone attending our meeting on?
Maybe not.
All right, no public comment on the meeting. Anyone in the room who would like to hear a public comment? Sure, come on up.
Well, Birch, resurrecting some old experience of the CTA way back in the winter years. Just things I noticed here, just we want to inquire. Operating revenue on page 70, operating revenue only increased a tiny amount after fair passenger fares dropped a little bit. Maybe you understand that already, but I'm kind of curious because ridership should be up in 2022. On page 77, that's also something to discuss. We have some money, just the invested pool of our cash, some of it's in the long term. We talked about the interest rates going up, but some of the long-term stuff should have gone. Investors should have dropped. Maybe that's what was retired. You probably struggled with that. Maybe I'm going to ask about that. Probably interest rate hike that you heard from us. Page 81, farebox recovery. In the good old days, farebox recovery, it was called the farebox recovery. It's actually how much did people pay for the service and rent? And there was a requirement that it would be 15%. But they changed the rules now so you can include funds that were not released from the fare box in the recovery to make the 15%. But I see that they kind of afford to, because the real fare box, people are paying for the ride, they're only paying 21% of the cost of the ride, or 17% includes the true cost of capital for the thing. I think I know this is an academic number, but I think a table showing how we do on that relative to other comparable agencies would be interesting. Not that the fare box recovery is the most important thing, but I think that's an interesting number to keep track of how much people are paying for it, and what's the right number for that, and whether that's dropping or rising. And I would say also the management letter, that's what I always go to, look for the gotchas, and there's almost nothing there, so that's wonderful, that's grand. But I haven't been watching this particularly, but I know I've heard rumors that the change in management of the OLTD was due to some irregularities or whatever. I don't know what that was. I don't know anything about it. It's a rumor. But I'm assuming that the internal controls, and so we won't reproduce that as a taxpayer. So that's enough said. But I just make sure that there are controls, and so whatever happens during that change will never happen again. Thank you very much. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. Any more public comment from people in attendance here this evening? All right. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back up to the dais. Is there anything you want to touch on, Mr. Levinson, after public comment?
The only thing I'd mention is that we keep our operating funds in our own bank account with West America Bank, which is not one of the banks that has had been mentioned in the last week of excitement on the financial market. So I looked today and thought it was down maybe 1%, some of the more troubled banks. The rest of our funds are still with the county pool. And so any of the extensive discussion about investments is really the county treasurer's investments. And even though there is that fair value adjustment, that's really only if they were forced to sell their investments right now, many of which they expect to keep the maturity. So we expect to be able to get dollar for dollar from our funds held with the county without any worry about that situation.
That's great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? But just one quick question for me. Is the 8 months of operational back, is that standard across the board? Is that more or is that less? Where do we fall in that range?
So kind of the rule of thumb that SACOG used to, the senior planner at SACOG that was there for years and years used to profess to tell the operators is 3 to 6 months would be your minimum. So you're slightly over that. So pretty good shape.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. All right, now I have no other questions. Anybody else up here? We're good? We'll give the order?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we do actually have, the board passed last year a policy regarding a minimum, a general reserve. Our funds are actually in excess of that policy right now. And that was to have a minimum, I think it was 3 months, operating expenses available. And so that is sort of, we won't ever budget, to draw that down unless the board declared an emergency, basically, to use it, but otherwise we would make sure we at least keep that minimum.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. All right, and with that, we will close agenda item number 9, and that brings us to final item on our agenda, adjournment. So there's lots of controversy around Robert's rules, whether you actually vote on it or my colleague David always says, it's, you know, when you approve the agenda, you approve the adjournment. I'm not sure what the standard is here, so.
Did you want to name my item?
Well, my second meeting here. A lot of experience, but yes, my understanding is that you do take an action vote on the adjournment.
All right, well, we will do that. All right, all in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Seeing none, we are adjourned.
Yeah, yeah.